Welcome back into the Hawks Talk Podcast, your source for everything about the Upper Valley Mighty Hawks. Really excited for this episode today. Ian Binky, as always, alongside Ali Winskowski and Megan Robinson. And the Nighthawks are on a hot streak.
Absolutely. I think after coming off of that losing streak, finally winning a game, and now they're on the win streak. They look how they did at the beginning of the season, and I think the energy's back. They look good.
Yeah, they do. They're fresh. They, like Megan said, they look like the start of the season. A lot of energy. It might be the new guys coming in or whatever, but something's clicking. I mean, besides for that Newport game, if you just put away that 14-0 loss, I mean, they won two before that, and then, or no, they won four before that, excuse me, and then they won two after.
Yeah, it's been a great stretch for Upper Valley. You mentioned that they won six of their last seven games, really bouncing back nicely from that Newport loss as well. But let's look at this team, what's really changed, and you got to look at the offense. Over that losing streak, they were only scoring, on average, 2.2 runs per game, and they've been blowing that out of the water. Even tonight, as we're recording this, they beat North Adams by the score of 5-3. They only got four hits, but they made those hits count, including the first homer of the year from Sarge.
They did. I mean, one of their common themes, especially at home, is scoring first. And they did that today, and they did that yesterday. They did it against Vermont in the first game that they played at that doubleheader. They've been starting to score really early, and I think that helps their mentality just to have a lead. And then going off of Sarge, I mean, what a player. He's on a hot streak, 95 miles per hour off the bat, 382 feet home run, his first home run. But the at-bat before that, he hit one to the fence. Yesterday, he had a triple, so something's clicking for him.
I think also the pitchers are being very consistent and really smooth up on the mound, and I think that's, as a pitcher, that's something that you have to always be consistent. And I think that's clicking. There has been like a few, they're trying to figure out who meshes in what game, but overall they're all just looking really good on the mound.
And they're really figuring out the starting pitching, which had been a big problem for the Upper Valley Nighthawks over that losing streak. But you look at how quickly they turn it around. They still had some bumps, especially in that loss to Newport. But you go back to that Vermont doubleheader where they got the sweep. Joey Purcell looked great. He, a little bit of a soft contact, bled to death a little bit. Just two pieces of contact that were over 80 miles per hour despite giving up the seven hits in his line of work. But Holt Mahardy was fantastic. Six innings, just allowing one run. I mean, that's exactly what they needed, even in that doubleheader, especially when you're running a little bit short on pitching.
Exactly, and it helped to build up the confidence, too, because that was right after the losing streak. I mean, they came into that doubleheader. They had won two games before it, but that was for the Governor's Cup. Vermont could have taken it that day, and Upper Valley didn't act like it at all. They came out swinging fire. They won both of them. And yeah, like I said, it's been pitching. I mean, then Newport, they had to use five pitchers, but Jacob Price looked good, and that was probably his best start of the whole season. And then, I mean, we had Frank Staccone start yesterday. He's never started before, yep, but did great. So something's clicking on both ends.
Yeah, I think Price and Staccone have been fabulous the last 2 days. I think overall they're great additions to the team. Yeah, they've been just awesome up there.
And another thing that's been really flying under the radar all season long but has really swung the bat well lately, Cole Fellows has been a huge breakthrough player. He got three hits in back-to-back days, game one of the Vermont doubleheader, and then again the following day. He's really been swinging the bat well, finding his power as well. He only had one extra base hit the entire month of June. It came against Bristol, I believe it was on the 13th, and then snapped back in a big way the first 2 days of June. He's gotten a double, so both of those days at games to start off the month. So it's a big turnaround for him, and he's been a valuable bat, especially with the departure of one of the hottest hitters in Ethan Lozama.
Exactly. We needed someone to step up. Ethan played his final game at Newport, so he's no longer with us. But
tough way to go out, too.
Yeah. It is. Really is. But, I mean, that's what it's coming down to. It's who's stepping up at the right time. Cole, a little bit quieter kid, doesn't like to talk to us much with our videos or anything like that, but yeah, he stepped up to the plate, and with these new people, he's not that new at all, but, like, it just takes who's going to step up at the right time, and it's his time. Maybe it's Sarge's time now. I mean, yeah, it's just whoever comes together.
I think another thing that we have to really accredit is the mental performance for yes. the players. Because it's tough going back-to-back for so many games, and Devin Drake, our mental performance coach, has been doing breathing exercises and different techniques before each of the games, and I think that's really helped each player get into a good, positive mindset, and I think that's also paid off for them really well.
And I think another thing that helps with that on the mental side of things is playing at home. Over that losing streak, it was pretty much a bus ride every day, only two home games over that losing streak. But now you're back here. You started off the month of July with several games at home, and those games have gone their way. The only one that they went on the road for did not go that well down in Newport. But you look at the home performances, the Nighthawks have really enjoyed playing here at the Maxfield Sports Complex, and they've enjoyed the fan support as well. The fan support here at the Max, especially in the closing innings against North Adams, you could hear, you know, the rhythmic applause, especially for the last few outs there. The fans have been a big factor.
They really have been, and they've been here all year long, even when we were on our 10-game losing streak. They may have been a little quieter, but there was always fans here living and dying with every pitch. But I think it's really helped, not only because they don't have to travel every day, but, I mean, we still have the long traveling. We went to Newport. I mean, that was like 4 hours each way.
Yeah.
But I think it just helps to take a deep breath. You don't have to get to the field till like 2 or whatever time their early work is. But it's just, you wake up and you're on home turf too.
And having that home turf is going to be an advantage looking at the schedule ahead. But right now we want to throw it back a little bit. We had a conversation with the commissioner of the NECBL, and Sean McGrath. He joined us here on the Hawks Talk podcast at our Jam Studios to discuss the plans for the league and their vision for the future, and also the media side of things, how things are going there. Let's take a listen. Welcome back into Hawks Talk. We are now joined by the commissioner of the NECBL, Sean McGrath. Sean, welcome to the Upper Valley.
It's great to be here, and as we enter the second half of the season in July.
So, Sean, you've been at the helm for a while now, and you've seen really the evolution in terms of the media side of teams as well as the on-field product. How do you envision the league kind of transforming over the next year or two?
It's a great question. I mean, I played in the early days of the NECBL when we had 5 teams, traveled in vans, no ticket sales, no sponsors, certainly no interns. And to see it turn into the, you know, complete operation that we have now, where our off-field operations, our recruiting of intern talent from around the country is just as important as recruiting the player talent, has come a long, long way, to say the least. And it's only becoming more and more important, evidenced by podcasts, your social media and graphics, and you know, team in Upper Valley has been, you know, raising the bar this year. And that's only going to continue to grow. Technology is becoming more and more evident. You know, targeted marketing is more important. You know, engaging with the fan base beyond just the games to keep the organization, you know, current, relevant, and connected to the fans is crucial to kind of building that brand for Upper Valley in this region. So, yeah, I see it continuing to grow. Obviously, ESPN Plus with our broadcast has been huge this year, so that's expanding our brand, but it's also expanding the talent pool of our interns. You know, there's more opportunities than just the social media presence. Certainly, you're looking at a lot of cameras here and the audio and visual, so, you know, it's growing and, yeah, excited for the future.
I think a lot of people don't really know what a commissioner does day to day. Or in the off season, we were talking to our GM, Matt Wright, and he was saying much of his work's in the off season. Is the same for you, or just what do you do?
It depends on Mother Nature and ejections and controversies that come up during the season. But if the weather's good and we're playing ball and we're just, you know, I can go to a ball game, sit and watch 9 innings, enjoy it. I don't have a horse in the race anymore. I used to be a general manager and, you know, going to the games and sweating it out for a W or, you know, late inning substitution or early, you know, last night I was in Vermont and Brian Gallagher was sweating out the 9th inning again. And I'm sitting there going, wow, this is just a great game. Look at the crowd. They're into it. This is drama. And just want to see a good pitch, good hit, good play. So I enjoy that piece of it. But, no, on any given day, you know, the entire ride here was filled with phone calls, you know, following up with GMs, you know, just, you know, providing some, you know, feedback or, you know, guidance back to them as needed. You know, the ESPN Plus experience has just added another level of conversation and discussion and organization. We've been searching for a corporate sponsorship director at the league level, so that's been a whole host of responsibilities. The coordination with social media at the league level has grown, so we have Alex Gutierrez, a great director of media relations for the league, and just kind of supporting him. Again, supporting the 13 teams, and that's the unique part, is that sometimes I hear from a lot of teams, sometimes I hear very little from a few, but every year there's something coming up. And with 13 teams, there's usually something in front of me, an email or a phone call or a text message, you know, it gets spread around amongst the 13 teams.
For you and for viewers who might not know your deep-rooted past in baseball, did your time playing inspire or motivate you to take on this role as commissioner, or how did that come about for you?
No, great question. I just got chills thinking about it, actually. You know, growing up, being a college athlete, there were, you know, limited places to play back in the late, you know, mid to late 90s, besides the Cape Cod League, the Alaska League, one in the Midwest, and then this, you know, young league called the NECBL that I knew a little bit about. In fact, I turned down a contract after my freshman year to play in the league with the Torrington Twisters. And then the next 2 years I played with Danbury Westerners. I had the privilege of signing with the Mets in year two, coming while I was actually a Danbury Westerner player and signed as a free agent that summer, which was exciting. And then years later I got into coaching, and then all of a sudden there's a team that's being introduced and established in my hometown of North Adams. And so I went to the town hall. I was there as an advocate, as a fan. You know, I was a beneficiary of this league. I thought it'd be great for our community. And the Watterson family from Keene, New Hampshire, they were the ones that were bringing the organization to North Adams. So I was a big proponent and advocate, and thrilled that they decided to, you know, create, you know, a new organization in my hometown. And I immediately jumped in coaching, and then became the general manager after they moved on. And, you know, it's just been a pleasure to be a part of the league, and certainly to see from the commissioner side, it was exciting to change from just running an A team to being the commissioner, because now I'm not worried about one team, not worried about the North Adams Steeplecats, which I was for 9 years. Now I'm worried about 13 teams, from the island to Montpelier, from Danbury, Sanford, everywhere in between. And every organization has strengths, weaknesses. Every community has strengths, weaknesses. Every stadium itself has a strength and weakness. So I get to go and kind of respect the operations, you know, and how well they're run based on their strengths and as an organization, as a community.
You yourself are a success story. You mentioned getting signed by the Mets out of the league, and Upper Valley had a success story last season with Kevin Brogman winning All-Star Game MVP, then getting the contract with the Angels. So what's it like seeing a lot of guys playing at this level, then their talents, their abilities being shown to scouts here in the NACBL, leading to them going to the next level?
I mean, that's the dream. Obviously, everybody that comes through the NACBL, they're at a very elite level. They're not that far away. This is a step in their career. This is, you know, maybe another step to become a professional. And for some, this may be the highest level of baseball that they experience. And it's going to be a great journey. And they're going to be signing autographs and being visiting schools and being mentors in the community. And that'll be something that they remember for a long time, whether they play professionally or not. But what the league has become with the analytics, with our TrackMan systems in every stadium, with Synergy in every stadium, with the reputation the league has become, every one of our players have an opportunity to, you know, compare themselves against other elite future professionals and see where they stand. And any given year, you know, a kid that may not be on a scout's radar is going to come in here and showcase themselves and put their names into those scouting departments for follows and to be evaluated down the road. And then there's other kids that come in here and just absolutely showcase himself, and everybody knows that they're a little bit different than the rest of the league, and it's just a matter of when they can be signed or drafted.
And kind of a follow-up question to that, too, with the new era of the transfer portal, that kind of opens a whole new door as well with guys looking for their next opportunity, even in collegiate ball. How does being a showcase here help with them finding a new home?
It's very important for the players. We can either complain about the NCAA and the ruling, which isn't going to do anybody any good. So it's a matter of how do you embrace it, how do you learn from it, how do you kind of make the best of it. And for our players to come, and if they put their names in the portal, this is definitely a showcase. College coaches are coming to watch. They're following stats. They can watch on ESPN Plus now, and it's definitely an opportunity to be re-recruited again. I think a lot of colleges around the country look to our league to say, well, these players are in the portal, and who's doing well, how are they competing, what are their analytics look like, and they're making decisions. In fact, Newport had, third baseman and second baseman last year on the championship team that both ended up at Georgia. And, here I am watching them on ESPN Plus, and, they're having a great year. And they were both transfers. They were not in great situations for themselves, and they ended up in a very great situation at Georgia. And their time in the NECBL was part of that roadmap.
The MLB has had a lot of rule changes recently with the pitch clock and things like that, and the NECBL still has tie games and ghost runners on second. Do you see the pitch clock or any other changes coming soon?
Yeah, I mean, every year, our entire league, we're always talking about the experience from year to year, and we've changed every other year several rules based on the experiences of the season. Pitch clock is something to look at. Our college players obviously are trained throughout the season to have it. I've talked to umpires about it. I've talked to managers about it. We haven't really seen a need to enforce a pitch clock rule because it's just not an issue. Somebody did bring up the in-between inning time. The NCAA has a two-minute timeline. That might be something that we may look at. We might be able to expedite except when there's interns, running on-field promotions. Innings that are marketing opportunities, 2 minutes, in and out, let's go. That might be something to look at. We had a rule where we had no limits for offensive conferences. So coaches can essentially call in their runners, their batter, as many times they want. I think that, after this year's experience, probably something that we will change. And so we're always observing and learning. The extra inning rule, our league would love to be able to just play straight baseball. If it goes 18 innings, it goes 18 innings. They're historic games, right? Can't do that. We don't have a AAA system. We have pitchers with pitching limits from their college coaches. We're obligated to follow the Major League Baseball Pitch Smart guidelines. So if you throw 31 pitch or 30 pitches a night, you can't pitch the next day. So there's so many restrictions. And, quite frankly, we felt that for our players, our position players who we don't want to pitch, our coaches, to not put them in a difficult situation, we had to kind of limit how far our games could go during the regular season. But we, at the same time, we also said we hate ties. Nobody wants a tie. And if we just went 10 innings, 11 innings, no runner in second base, I think we would have a lot of ties. The ghost runner, some coaches hate it. It's a lot of drama. Our fans have enjoyed, I'm here for 2 innings at most. There's probably going to be a run. There might be a couple runs scored right now. And then you look at the coaches. Are they pinch running for the runner on second base with a fast runner? Are they going to bunt the person over? Are they going to swing away, go for a big inning? It puts a lot of pressure on the coaches to manage strategically. So I've enjoyed it. I know that we all know the game's going to end within 2 innings. The coaches know that. They can look at the bullpen and go, I don't have to worry about running Ian out there for 5 innings and then not having any relievers tomorrow or something like that. So,
kind of switching up the tempo here, when you're not being commissioner of the NECBL, what is something that you like to do to spend in your downtime? And because it's very busy throughout the season, but what's something that you like to do to relax?
Well, a lot of dog walks. My wife and I will take our dog for a walk. I have a daughter in college, a daughter in high school, so high schoolers looking to play college soccer someday. So typically, you know, if I'm not at a baseball game, I'm oftentimes driving her around somewhere in New England for a practice or a game. So I enjoy that. That's good quality family time for myself. You know, summer hobbies would be, you know, golf at some point if I have the opportunity on the weekends. But, yeah, you know, and still have my primary full-time job, which is also obviously a big time commitment and focus to have the baseball work in and around around that. So it's not a lot of free time, to say the least, during summer. As every general manager and coach knows and interns know, it's a pretty intense summer.
Two-part question here. Favorite ballpark food, and are you looking forward to getting maple creamy tonight?
Of course, yes, and number two. And ballpark food, I might have to go with some of our French fries around the league. We have some cheese fries, some French fries, pulled pork. Yeah.
There you have it. That is Sean McGrath, the commissioner of the NECBL. Thank you so much for joining us here on Hawks Talk.
Thank you so much to NECBL Commissioner Sean McGrath for joining us here on Hawks Talk. We're back now. Ian Binky, Megan Robinson, Allie Winskowski. And looking at the schedule ahead of our analytics special, that's coming out on Monday, so stay tuned for that. But ahead of that, it's going to be a little bit of a hectic stretch this beside the July 4th holiday off. And you have several games that are important, especially as you start the schedule with Keene coming up.
Absolutely. I mean, another divisional game there. And that's one where it's been a little bit of a battle. I mean, Upper Valley did beat them last time they were at Keene, 17-9. That was the day that Upper Valley really showed off their strength, that they aren't going away. That, again, was the second game back from that losing streak. And they put up, what, the third or fourth most runs in history. So
third most, yeah.
Yeah, like, even though they gave up 9 runs to Keene in the smallest ballpark, yeah, they did combat that and almost doubled their opponent.
Yeah, I think looking ahead to, I think, coming back from that long losing streak for us, they know that they can win against some of the better teams in the league. So when we have those really important games coming up, I think they know that they have the ability and the capability to beat them.
Yeah, and looking at the slate ahead, of course, coming back from the holiday with at Alumni Field, then a doubleheader down in Danbury, and you feel like those are two must-win games against a team that's really struggled this season, and you feel like you need to take both of those to keep pace with every team above you right now. And then back at home on Sunday at 5 o'clock, taking on the Ocean State Waves, and that's another big one because you look at the standings coming into tonight, of course, some movement with the Upper Valley win, them beating the North Adams Steeple Cats, and some surprise results a little bit further up. Coming into today, Upper Valley with just half a game out of a playoff spot, but then you get the win, you pull level, which with a bunch of teams clouded in there. You had Mystic and North Shore that were both half a game ahead of you. Mystic got a win earlier today, North Shore idle, so you still sit half a game back of that last playoff spot, but you figure you're right in it. This is exactly where you want to be after losing 10 straight. You go on a hot streak. You were never that far out of it, and now you see that you're really in a battle for that 8 spot.
Yeah, like you said, Ian, I don't think anyone this time a few weeks ago would put the Nighthawks in a playoff spot just because of how badly things were going on that stretch, but now they turned it ahead, and like you said, they're never really out of it. Danbury is going to be huge, especially if they take 2. Like, hopefully they will. And then also Ocean State. I mean, Ocean State killed them 8-1 the last time that they played, but that was also part of that losing streak. So if it wasn't part of that losing streak, I think anything could have happened. The Nighthawks' mindset was just so in the dumps that every game was a struggle.
Yeah, looking at it, I actually misread my scorebook there. It was Martha's Vineyard, which is also another surprise turnaround after losing their first 6 games to start the season. They were out of the playoffs right now on a tiebreaker, but they got a win today. So they are now in a playoff position. The Nighthawks still just half a game back, but you're right there in the thick of things. And if you get a win against Ocean State, which is a ball club that also came in with the same record that the Nighthawks had coming into today at 9-12, You get a win there. You knock a team back a peg in those playoff standings, and you figure right there in it, and you try to stay competitive.
Exactly. And Martha's Vineyard was a tough doubleheader for the Upper Valley. I mean, they had that second game called because of
fog.
I was going to say mist, but that wasn't correct. Even though the Upper Valley was losing that one, I mean, that was an extra couple innings that could have meant something, especially on how hot Upper Valley is right now.
Looking forward to those games ahead and Upper Valley trying to stay hot, but the Independence Day holiday coming up. We got the day off, so what are your plans for the break?
Happy 4th of July.
Yeah.
I would love to see some fireworks, though. I don't know if that's going to happen here in Vermont. Other than that, I don't
Fisher
know,
Cats
barbecue.
Game. Fisher Cats have fireworks.
There's some Fisher Cats game. We did see fireworks against Vermont that one time. That was an upsetting day.
I wish we
happy
had
4th.
I wish we had fireworks here.
Yes.
We should have had it tonight.
We should have. That would have been awesome. Or that walk-off day.
Yeah.
Can you imagine
yeah.
if fireworks went off after it?
It would have been a little bit tough because it was still light outside after that doubleheader. But the fireworks were provided tonight with Sarge Nick Quagliano getting his first home run of the season. And we're looking to keep that power surge going because that's been something new. The Nighthawks no longer in the bottom of the league with the fewest home runs. They've now passed that baton to other teams in the league, and they're trying to keep it going here with another busy slate after the holiday. But we hope you enjoy the 4th of July and enjoy it with your friends, family, whoever you're spending it with. And we'll be sure to have a good time up here as well on the Nighthawks broadcast team, the media interns, everyone here with the Nighthawks players as well. But we'll see you next time for the Hawks Talk podcast again. On Monday, we have the analytics special. Members of the analytics team will come in and talk about what these numbers mean, both for interpreting, you know, what makes a great player in the New England League, as well as how the players are using these stats to really get them to the next level. But until then, for Allie Wenskowski and Megan Robinson, my name is Ian Binky. We'll see you next time on the Hawks Talk podcast. Take care and have a good one.